Song Poker.
From the dawn of time I came, moving silently down through the centuries, living many secret lives, struggling to reach the time of the gathering, when the few who remain will battle to the last. No one has ever known we're among you. Until now.
'Cause it's song poker time. I'm James Burton, and I am a worm. And this is Ian Martin, and he's an effete snob who died on his knees. Hello, Ian.
Hi. Are you having fun? Do you want me to go away for 5 minutes?
Yeah, if you would. I'm having so much fun.
Yeah.
Why am I quoting the cult 80s classic movie Highlander, you might wonder?
I'll tell you why. It's because you're awake. It's up there. It's got to be up there with Nail and I as the most gleefully quotable movie.
Well, for us, certainly. But yeah. All will be revealed a little later on. This is, of course, a music podcast, not a movie podcast, isn't it?
But, I've forgotten, yes.
Sure. Yeah. So for now, Ian, what's got your cochleas up this week?
Two albums I've been listening to this week. Electric Tears by Buckethead.
Oh.
Which is a very nice bit of acoustic guitar.
Formerly of
Briefly
Guns N' Roses.
Formerly of Guns N' Roses. They let him go after he built a huge wooden chicken coop in the studio and filled it with dog shit. I think they thought that was going a bridge too far, even for Guns N' Roses. He is, by all accounts, a very strange man, but he's a very good guitarist, and this is one of those really arresting acoustic albums. Also, I've listened on repeat because no one... I think I put the album on at work, and because I was having such a bad day and everyone I think is a little bit scared of me when I'm having a bad day, they just left it on. So we heard it about 8 times. Audio Vertigo by Elbow.
Oh, the Elbow album. And how is it?
It's fine. Yeah. So what about you? What have you been listening to while you've been out doing whatever it is you do between the hours of midnight and 4 a.m.? With your black leather bag.
Well, I'm afraid what I listen to when I'm doing that is for my own private business. But other times, I've been doing a lot of decorating, having just bought a house. So lots of renovation. And I wanted to fall back on something familiar, yet energising and inspirational. So I've been listening to a lot of Peter Gabriel. Yeah, how do you feel about that?
I mean, it's not what I would have chosen to fall back on, but I don't really know the Gabriel beyond the one about the hammer and the one he did with Kate Bush. That's kind of where my interest in him kind of stopped in the
day. There you go. Well, yes, but it's I'm in one of those moods where, and you get them, I'm sure, all the time, where only one artist will suffice and I have to play it to death.
Yes.
And I have to play it all day for a number of days and
yes.
Then I'm sated.
Well, that's fair enough. Do you find, as I often do, that these phases coincide with sort of women leaving you?
I mean, I do have those phases, admittedly,
yeah.
And I have done in the past.
When you get locked in the groove of the Gabriel,
yes.
For example, then there are many people who might, after, say, 3 or 4 days of that, they might be like, if I hear one more song by Peter Gabriel, I'm going to cut your head off.
I only do it to myself.
A bit like Tom York in that respect. When I lean into one particular band, it often leads to very acrimonious State of the Union kind of conversations.
Yeah.
And then I don't listen to the Smashing Pumpkins for a couple of months.
Do you have a game for me before we continue?
We
with
do.
The meat of the
I've got the as is now traditional. I've got a game of song or wrong for you if you're feeling up to the task.
I'm feeling lucky, punk.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear it. They're all there's a theme. This week, to be fair, there was a theme for the last 12 odd episodes, and that theme was umlauts. But no umlauts this time. They're all they all come from the world of children's cartoons and children's cartoon soundtracks and movie soundtracks and things like that. So I've got 3 songs for you. one of which I've made up, and I'll admit that now, but two of which are genuine things that do actually exist. Okay, shall I lay them upon you?
Please, yeah.
But, okay, song number one is I'm Too Smurfy by Right Said Fred. Song number two, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles by Mike Patton from Faith No More. And song number three, By the Power of Grayskull by He-Man and Orko, featuring Kenny Loggins.
Wow, what a triptych. My goodness, I feel like I could trip up on this one, blimey. I mean, Kenny Loggins with He-Man and Orko together at last.
Because wasn't there like a recent movie of that, or there was going to be a recentish He-Man movie? But
oh, I don't know. They rebooted the cartoon, I think.
That might be as far as it went, and that might be all in it. But this one, we're going back to that. I think it was 85 or 86.
A bit later, wasn't it? The Dolph Lundgren.
That's the one. That's the man. Yeah. That's the He-Man.
I'm going to say that the Smurfy song is the fake.
Interesting. I'm Too Smurfy by Right Said Fred is, I'm afraid, a genuine song that really happened.
So, bugger.
What I think it demonstrates is that the Fairbrass brothers will do literally anything for money.
Oh, fair play to them.
I mean, yes, on the one hand. The other song that is completely genuine is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles by Mike Patton from Out of Faith No More.
I thought that would be genuine, but I should have known that Kenny Loggins would never duo with Orko. He would never have done it.
They won't.
Of course he wouldn't.
They won't get on the same. They have to have separate pieces of carpet now when they tour. They won't look at each other.
Yeah.
You know,
there's no way he would have done that. John Cougar Mellencamp would have done it.
Sure. Mellencamp would have been all over that shit.
Huey Lewis would have done it, but not Loggins.
No. If only you'd followed your gut. Okay, well, there we go. So we've warmed up. We're here to talk about music and apparently the film Highlander. Surprise me, stun me, shock me. What are we talking about this time?
Well, I would love to talk about the song A Kind of Magic from the album A Kind of Magic, the 1986 album, of course, by the British rock band Queen. Just in case anyone didn't know that they were British. It's a kind of magic. It's a kind of magic. A kind of magic. One dream, one soul, one prize, one goal, one golden glance of what should be. It's a kind of magic. One shot. The song, Ian, do you remember it?
I've never forgotten it. That's over delivering. It's not like it's literally seared onto my brain. It's not like it's the first thing I remember in the morning. I don't wake up and start doing the, you know. But yes, I remember the song from the time it came out. With the benefit of hindsight, it was only a very short space of time between that and 91 and Freddie dying and Greatest Hits 2 coming out, and I had the video for the Greatest Hits 2, so it was all the single videos, and I remember watching that really quite a lot for a.
So the video of Kind of Magic is directed by Russell Mulcahy, who of course directed the movie Highlander, and so Kind of Magic is the unofficial soundtrack to the movie. It's got 9 tracks on it. 6 of them were used in the film. The movie itself never got actually a soundtrack release. But why I wanted to talk about it, I guess, and obviously Queen had a vast career and, you know, full of amazing hits. They're extremely popular. So why concentrate on this particular time and this sort of era of their music? I guess for me, it's a sort of bit of a sweet spot. We were, 10, 11?
Yeah.
When this came out. But this is a post Live Aid thing. Now, I suppose it might be fair to say that Queen were a little unfashionable at the time when they performed at Live Aid, but that kind of reignited them a little bit. And this was the album and tour that came from that performance. But it's the last 5 years of Freddie's life. As you say, he died in 91. He had the diagnosis of AIDS in 87. So this is a really a sweet spot before the end.
Yeah.
And what a film as well.
Well, coincidentally, since we happen to be skirting around it, what a film, what a movie, what a seminal chunk of our youth that film is.
It really was. When I was 12, I thought that this was the greatest bit of cinema I'd ever seen.
And do you find that time has altered that perspective?
Well, I have seen it many times. I wouldn't necessarily rate it up there in the pantheon of great films, but I think it's got some genuinely brilliant moments, and I think it's really well directed for what it is. It's kind of a schlocky 80s sci-fi thriller, isn't it? An adventure movie. But as a prepubescent kid, that concept that someone is immortal and would outlive mortal love was mind-blowing to me, that he could fall in love with someone but watch as they grow old and he doesn't, of course.
Yeah,
we see BT Edney in the film, don't we, as the, you know, the young Highland lass,
yes,
who he's in love with, and then it segues and she's much older and she's on her deathbed and he's young and young
and virile.
Yes, and lo, it has come to pass that I too am very much like Connor McLeod from the movie, you know, in that I remain handsome, youthful, virile, as you say, whilst the old crone that I'm with, her aging continues apace.
It's
so it does resonate with me.
Yeah, it's surprising that we both glommed onto this film, and it does sort of exemplify our life choices, particular uncanny ability to stay young and very hirsute. And also we like killing people with swords in car parks.
Yeah.
Specifically between the hours of 12 and 4, and you have your black leather bag that's got a Toledo Salamanca in it, you know. Yeah.
That's right. I tell you what, it's good my girlfriend doesn't actually listen to this podcast, otherwise she probably would cut my head off in a car park for saying that.
For someone who claims to want to live forever, I'd say you're on very thin ice right now.
So, back to the song, Kind of Magic. So it's written by the band's drummer, Roger Taylor. He was shown an early cut of the movie and hooked in on the idea of a kind of magic, which, you know, McLeod says a couple of times in the film. But apparently Roger's first sort of the initial demo was a lot sort of harder and more serious, and then Freddie got hold of it and sort of added the new bass line. What a bass line, by the way, by John Deacon. Made it a little bit more pop, for the better, I think.
Yeah, I've not heard any darker version, but I don't know that would have been where Queen would have wanted to have gone at that point. They were kind of, as you were saying, on the back of Live Aid, they were kind of shoring up their career. And actually, everyone always says, oh, you know, Queen were kind of unpopular before Live Aid, and every band has these periods where they're in favour, they're out of favour. Queen had only been around for, what, since the early 70s?
Yes, that's true, isn't it? Yeah.
So we're talking about a 10-year creative period where they were absolutely loved by everyone, and then they really just become a bit embarrassing. And you think of bands now, I mean, like, for the sake of argument, a band like Coldplay, they've been around for over 20 years now. They've never really experimented with doing anything different. And I have no idea about their popularity, but I don't feel like they've ever been extremely one thing or the other. They're always just kind of there, and people are kind of fine with them. And the more I think about it, and the more I think of other bands, David Bowie's the best example I can think of someone else who kind of waxes and wanes. Otherwise, bands tend to kind of stay constant in people's minds.
That's true. And if we actually unpick that idea that they were perhaps a little unfashionable, that doesn't mean they were unpopular. And of course, the turning from the 70s into the 80s, that sort of 70s pomp that they had did continue. So they did you know, the Flash soundtrack, another great soundtrack we've mentioned before in the early 80s. But then, of course, they had hits like I Want to Break Free, you know, earlier than this. So, yeah, they were still doing very, very well. But somehow, I think Live Aid really cemented them as, I hate the phrase national treasures, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was kind of like maybe they'd passed... During their set in Live Aid, they'd passed some kind of audition that no one knew they were doing to be like the big British F-off band. It's all about Freddie's charisma, really, isn't it? None of those other bands had Freddie Mercury, and my God, he got the most out of that crowd in the 20 minutes they were afforded.
Someone once asked me what was more important to Queen. Was it Freddie's voice or Brian's guitar? And I thought at the time, what a silly question, you know. Of course it's Freddie's voice.
Mm.
But actually, that May guitar is... really iconic in itself, isn't it? And you know, it's actually literally a one-off. I mean, it was made out of a fireplace. I think he and his father created it.
Sure. But there's a very easy way to test this theory. If you want to know what Queen with Brian May's guitar but without Freddie Mercury would sound like, you listen to the Queen and Paul Rodgers album Cosmos Rocks from 2008.
Sure, or go and see them live with Adam Lambert. Now, Adam Lambert's probably a stunning voice.
Yeah, he's probably far too good for this experiment to work. You really specifically need to see Paul Rodgers. You know, yeah. Because they needed... How many bands can we think of that are that have the stature they have because it's two members, you know, whether it's Lennon McCartney or Buckingham Nicks or you know, for me, Axl and Slash, whatever, Bono and the Edge. It's you need at least two geniuses in the band and then you've really got something special.
Yeah, but Queen had four very active members, didn't they?
My quiz answer that I love is that Queen are, I think, still the only band who all four members wrote a number one hit single for the band.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I love that.
Another little bit of trivia that I like about this song, Kind of Magic, apparently, is that Chris Rea performed the clicks at the start.
It's a kind of magic.
Well, they are very superior clicks. I mean, you can tell they weren't just done by any old Tom, Dick or Harry.
Yeah, I mean, apparently he, about 7 or 8 years ago, he said that he was responsible for those clicks. Now, quite why, perhaps he was sort of sharing a studio at the time and they invited him in, but didn't want him to provide his guitar licks or that gravelly, that lovely Geordie voice he had.
It's a kind of emphysema wouldn't have really gone over as well, I don't think. Is this the last Queen album they made before the shadow of AIDS hung over what Freddie was writing and talking about? Or is this the first? I'm going to, as we talk about the album more fully, I'm going to suggest that maybe it's written with the knowledge of what's going to happen. And that gives it a philosophical and a thematic heft.
So this started production in 85, and he could possibly have realised that something was wrong, but I believe the diagnosis came in 87, but then he still sat on that, you know, that wasn't public knowledge for a while. So I don't know, to be honest, whether he knew something was horribly wrong. Yeah, it's a good point. They made two albums while he was still alive after this one, didn't they?
There was Kind of Magic, then... What was
the Miracle?
The Miracle. I can never remember the name of it. the miracle, and then
I love that album.
So and this is a thing I find with Queen albums as a whole. They've got brilliant singles on. There's often like six or seven really strong singles, and then there's three things that might just as well be called, this is a bit of filler.
They're not the only band to have been guilty of that, of course. But
no, but they literally don't even try and do songs sometimes. I think it's on The Miracle. There's just like sort of 2 minutes of like weird noises and things that just kind of lead from one brilliant hit into the next one. So Queen albums have never really been as much of a thing for me. I've always just been about the singles.
Yeah, and that's fair enough. This has got 9 tracks, I believe, and I think they're all pretty good. So it opens, the album opens with One Vision.
Fried Chicken.
This is the first song they recorded and wrote after Live Aid. And I think, again, Roger Taylor wrote this. And I think it had been a serious song about Martin Luther King Jr. And then Freddie changed it to sort of quite comedic lyrics. But it was still a big hit. But it was never used in Highlander, because apparently it was used in Iron Eagle first. They nabbed it first.
Oh, right.
Yeah. But then you've got Kind of Magic, is the lead single and the second track. Mm-hmm. And then my personal favourite, One Year of Love. Do you know this? Do you remember it? Because, of course, it's used in the movie when Brenda is in the bar.
I love this song. It's got a brilliant build.
It has. It's got a fantastic build. And it's a John Deacon song. Actually, a lot of the lyrics could be perhaps a little bit schmaltzy, I don't know. But actually, I think it's elevated again by, as so many of the songs are, by Freddie's vocal performance.
Freddie Mercury did manage to elevate a lot of songs, a lot of silly bollocks lyrics to greatness. No one's ever sounded like they meant anything as much as Freddie does when Freddie's singing about something.
That's true.
Do you know what I mean? It's so earnest and so powerfully delivered.
Yeah, but this song's great. It's got a sax in it, which is great, and a string section towards the end as well. So it's very cinematic, and it's used wonderfully in the movie. Now, on a couple of trips to New York, I've gone to that bar in a sort of a little homage, or pilgrimage, should I say? It's Peter McManus's bar on 7th Avenue. There's a jukebox in it, and you can play this song.
Oh,
in the
lovely bar,
and the bar hasn't changed a bit. It's a sports bar, you know, very blue collar, and you can sit at the bar where McLeod and Brenda sit and listen to this song. And I remember talking to the barman, do you know why we've put this song on? And he had no idea. I think, of course, the bar is used for quite a few films,
right.
And he didn't even know what Highlander was, but there you go. We had a good time.
I'm sure you did. I was expecting the barman to sort of look at you and go, I have to hear this fucking song 38 times a day. Yes, I know why you've put it on, but in an American accent. Did the film totally sort of die on its arse over here then?
No, I don't think so. I think it was reasonably well attended and probably improved by Queen's soundtrack.
Sure, sure. So after One Year of Love, we've got Pain Is So Close to Pleasure.
The S&M anthem, yes.
I'm not sure I know that one either. Let me cue that up. Oh, no, it sounds like Tina Turner. I don't want to hear any more of that.
Well,
the
phrase pain is so close to pleasure actually appears in the song One Year of Love. So it's obviously a theme that they built on. Then we have Friends Will Be Friends. Side two goes, Who Wants to Live Forever?
Now, let's stop there because this is my thesis. Mm. Would it not be something of a coincidence to have written a song that good, that sad, with that title, and not know exactly what you're doing?
But it was written by Brian May.
Did he write the words?
Yeah.
But I don't
think on
know.
The album version, Brian May sings the opening lyrics as well.
Yeah, he does. I don't know that song would have quite the emotional resonance it does for me if it hadn't been in Highlander. If I'd just heard the song because Dad had it on a record that he played every Sunday lunchtime, possibly it wouldn't feel quite as emotional or profound. Then give me the prize, which is just some noise, right?
Yeah, it's kind of heavy metal-esque.
Yeah, it's like listening to the Spinal Tap album, Break Like the Wind.
As a response to Highlander and the character of Kurgan, who needs that heavy metal sound, that edgy, aggressive sound, it fits, doesn't it?
It does.
It doesn't belong on the album necessarily, but
it would go nicely on the actual official soundtrack album that doesn't exist.
Yeah, because of course they recorded New York, New York as well, which Kurgan sings along to.
Yeah.
But never made it onto the album, so I don't know whether that's a sort of rights issue or the theme from New York, New York. Yeah.
It's interesting when you... I don't feel like it happens now, but there was that period where you had bands like Queen, Prince, to a lesser extent, people like John Bon Jovi, who, when they agree to do, like, the song for a film, they like the film so much, they go away and they write 10 really good songs and make an album of it. Mm. And have absolutely no problem or embarrassment putting out that record as one of theirs, even though everything's informed by a movie. Do they still do that?
Perhaps in animation they do it more.
But no, you didn't get someone like Bruno Mars being so inspired by the Avengers Age of Ultron that he went away and wrote a 10-song masterpiece about the Avengers Age of Ultron.
Well, I'm still waiting for that.
And then Don't Lose Your Head, cracking stuff, and Princes of the Universe, or as I always call it, Las Palabras del Amor.
I don't actually like a lot of Queen tracks. I still appreciate them, though.
Right.
I still think they're a great band. And they're so singular as well, aren't they? You know, they're so unique.
It's incredible because Brian May and John Deacon never looked like they were put on this earth to be rock stars. Freddie did, and Freddie made that band exactly what he needed it to be to justify his existence. But there was always this kind of tension between being brilliant but on the edge and just being a bunch of twats. And, you know, sometimes some of the videos are a bit kind of twatty, but often with Queen and their videos, I can't separate them from the song, and I don't enjoy the song as much because I like watching the videos, because Queen videos were often really kinetic and propulsive, and I think it's probably part of just loving Freddie. It's always nice to just see Freddie having fun.
The video, the celebrated video to I Want to Break Free, where, of course, they're all, you know, they're cross-dressing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. However, it's really a video of two halves, because the second half has Freddie in a sort of harlequin cat suit.
Yes.
Doing sort of modern dance, and it's bloody awful.
It's rolling around on young women in leotards in a way that, of all the members in the band, he'd have been less interested in.
Yeah, probably. It's absolutely dreadful. Everyone only remembers that first opening, you know, seconds.
The bit with the vacuum cleaner, really. And that vague sense of unease you feel when you when you analyse how you're feeling right now about Roger
about
Taylor.
About Roger Taylor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
God, he was hot. St. Bob Geldof called Queen, I believe, the Abba of Rock. I'm not quite sure how he meant that, whether he meant it as sort of dismissive as it sounds, but actually maybe he's right, because in a sense, you know, they're extremely well-crafted pop songs.
And there's a lot of them. They're all brilliant. And that legacy will stand forever. So that's how I'm choosing to interpret that comment.
Mm.
You know, there's probably no finer praise than being the Abba of rock. Do you have a Queen period that you prefer to the rest of it? And where does this album sort of sit amongst their body of work for you?
Well, I definitely prefer 80s.
Yeah.
As opposed to 70s. Although, obviously, Bo Rap's quite good, isn't it?
Quite catchy. Remind me, is that the one about the is that the one about Biss Miller?
That's right, little Biss Miller.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I think I've heard that a couple of times. Yeah,
yeah. Saying that's a good song, regardless of time. It's a bit like when we did the Paul Simon pod, and you said, you know, "Bridge Over Troubled Water" is a good song. I was like,
yeah.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think I let you off lightly with that one, because it's not much of a concession, really, is it?
No.
You know, of course it's what, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody or you know, Bridge Over Troubled Water. They are not just great songs, but great recordings of human history. They are.
Yes, they are. Possibly, you know, two of the, let's say, top 50 most important artifacts of the 20th century.
Yeah, you'd have to be a complete potato of a man to kind of say otherwise. So,
I don't like him, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. I do prefer 80s Queen as well. Mm. And I don't know if it's because that 70s stuff was a little bit, you know, I just...
Baroque?
I think maybe that was it. I think maybe as a kid in the 80s, I liked things really quite straightforward.
Mm.
And, you know, some of the work Queen did from this album through to Innuendo. You know, I love Breakthrough, and I love the video to Breakthrough.
It's brilliant.
And it's, you know, it's probably not the most sophisticated musical offering the world has ever heard. But they're on a crappy little steam train that doesn't look like it could pull your shopping home, really. But they're all smashing through brick walls in it, and, you know, Freddie's doing the big Freddy fist thing, and it's marvellous.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, it's a good song.
John Deacon sort of playing the bass, looking slightly terrified as they travel along at, what, 15 miles an hour on a steam train. Mm. It's great. You know, I love it. And that's my era of Queen, and I guess it really did kick off with this one.
Well, let's move on then to my favourite section of our pod, increasingly. It's Voiding the Vom, everybody.
Voiding the Vom.
So, young Jimbo, it's your turn this episode, apparently.
It is, yes. Now, I have two vom-inducing offerings for you.
Would you say offerings or would you say horrors?
Well, I'll let you be the judge of that.
That's literally my job. I am the judge of that.
It literally is your job. Yes. So, first, and, you know, you may wish to take a little break that we'll edit out to remind yourself of this 1983 hit single by Roberta Flack and Peebo Bryson. It's called Tonight I Celebrate My Love.
No one's gonna find us. We'll leave the world behind us. When I make love to you.
I don't wish to denigrate these two artists. You know, Roberta Flack, great artist. Peebo Bryson, what a voice. But really, this song. So it's about nocturnal intimacy. you know, making love, nookie, but it really is gross. And I've tried time and again to arouse myself to this song, and it's just not happening. I want my money back. Actually, because, you know, I remember this song. It was on the first Now That's What I Call Music album. So I had it when I was sort of, you know, 7, 8 years old. And I always found this disgusting. I always sat there with this sort of downturned grimace on my face.
Was it that kind of pre-adolescent terror that you kind of knew what sex was and how embarrassing and ghastly it was all going to be? And that awkwardness.
I don't know if I was sophisticated enough to sort of to have that sort of terror, but I knew that something wasn't right about this. It's just not. It's a bit like sort of having to contemplate your parents having sex.
Well, I was going to give you that choice. It's like,
yeah,
you can watch this video with those two in it, or you can watch some kind of AI video with your actual parents sitting there making faces at each other.
But it's so grim, isn't it? It's like if your parents were in a three-way with Michael Gove. It's just horrible. And she sings, it seems the only natural thing to do. The only natural thing to do? I mean, you know.
Going for a dump is quite natural. That doesn't necessarily mean you want to sing a song about it.
No, you could take a shit together and that'd probably be arguably less disgusting than
tonight
the song.
Tonight I defecate my love to you. That's hideous. I'm giving that a certain mark.
Okay.
But that's only one of your two options. You have a backup option which you can surprise me with.
Well,
and maybe I'll go the other way.
There are two options, but as McLeod says, there can be only one. And the second choice is Orinoco Flow by Enya.
Oh, sail away, sail away, sail away. That's if one of the Wombles had a period. I've not consciously heard it since, I want to say, 1992? When did it come out?
Well, so this came out in 88, and I do remember only hearing it once it had hit the top spot and thinking, what on earth is this shit? You know, how did people get this to number one? But that's possibly unfair. Obviously, it's a very popular song, and I'm slightly conflicted here. I like Gaelic music, but I don't enjoy New Age music, and I think this came to represent that sort of popular movement. I'm not particularly a fan of the New Age industry in general, because, well, you know, the shitty, sneering cynic in me thinks it's not the wholesome little cottage industry it pretends to be, really. It's some sort of vast conglomerate-like thing shifting millions of incense and crystals to cretins, isn't it? But, you know, perhaps I'm actually a big fat hypocrite, because I actually quite like going into those shops with my son, who enjoys buying stones and crystals and things, and I quite like smelling incense. I call it incest, obviously,
just for,
and who doesn't like a dragon bookend or dream catcher?
Absolutely. I once got terribly confused between a dream catcher and a moon cup, and I was giving this lady some really terrible advice. but never mind. We turned it around in the end.
I love I love Enya's sister's band Clannad. You know their stuff.
Yeah. So Enya left Clannad before they did
the Robin of Sherwood stuff,
Rubbing the Hooded Legend. Man, which is a song about wanking.
I love that stuff. I mean, yeah, no, Richard Carpenter led mysticism from the show. Love it. But I don't like anything by Enya. I mean, she must have made an absolute fortune from...
Oh, absolutely. She's the second best-selling Irish music act overall after the rock band U2.
Who?
U2.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know them.
No. We'll have to have a listen to them and cover them next time. Yeah. So she's sold 80 million albums.
That's extraordinary.
And that can't all be off the back of one single unless she sold 80 million best of albums because they had Orinoco Flow on them.
Yes, but are they all bought with the express purpose of having a relaxing bubble bath, easy listening?
Bottle of white wine.
Bottle of white candles. Wine on the go. Candles, yeah. Incest.
Oh, it's painful, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, and this song was particularly used to death in adverts to sell trips to Bali or incontinence pads or whatever it was, you know. So anyway, that's...
I think of the two, I'd rather go to Bali. But
So they're my two choices. Orinoco Flow by Enya or Tonight I Celebrate My Love by Roberta Flack and Peebo Bryson. Which one is going to be blasted into space?
Well, I've thought about it long and hard. I've deliberated. I've cogitated. I've done other things that rhyme with that. One of them strikes me as a great piece of music that I was too young for at the time it came along. And the other one is the most monstrous and appalling thing I've come across in a long time. So I'm afraid we're going to be blasting Roberta Flack. And the other gentleman, whose name completely escapes me, Peebo Bryson.
Yeah.
Peebo obviously lodged in my head because that's quite distinctive, but I had no idea what his last name was. Peebo Bryson. They're both going on the ship, they're going into space, and I'm afraid Enya lives to sing that song in your shell like for the rest of eternity like a ghost.
Voiding the Vom.
Fair enough, them's the breaks. So here we go, let's load this. I mean, really, we're being silly, aren't we? We don't actually load the artists into the rocket. Oh, there it goes.
I have actually been doing that. Was that...
We should just actually only put just a copy of the CD, really.
We don't
really need to sort of send the unwitting artist to
I might have made an error.
Okay. So you actually put U2 into...
Yeah.
Right.
I put Bono into geostationary orbit. Cool.
Okay, well, there we go. The world has been rid of another egregious pop song.
So I'm going to go out with my net and I'm going to round up some more appalling songs, and when we come back we'll blast some more of them into space.
Okay, well, Ian, it's been a pleasure. Goodbye.
Has it though? Has it really?
It's
been a kind of magic.
Oh, how lovely. And I've got something to say. It's better to burn out than to fade away.
You're cruising for a piece of ass. I got there. Yes.
Well done.
Hurrah.
Goodbye, everyone. Toodle-tipsy.
Cheery bum. Sorry, I went all over you. Song Poker was produced by Electric Sodcast Studios.
Hi. I'm Candy.
Of course you are.
When I make love to you.